Strikes and labor organizing are on the rise as essential workers grapple with safety concerns while they're on the job. How will this moment in labor history influence the future of unions? Joining us to talk about that is Mike Elk. He's the founder and lead reporter at paydayreport.com. Welcome, Mike.
Great to be on the show.
Your report on labor organizing and unions at Payday Report talks about, you've been reporting on that. Talk about this pandemic and the effect that it's having.
Well, we've seen a massive increase in the number of workers that have gone out on strike as a result of COVID-19. Right now, a lot of workers are in workplaces where they're exposed. We've seen huge problems in meatpacking plants where we've seen several hundred workers in these facilities each get COVID. We've seen a lot of meatpackers die. There have been a lot of other professions, transit industries, healthcare, where there have been a lot of workers that have been exposed because of poor working conditions. And what we've seen in these industries is that workers are taking matters into their own hands. They're just not going to die without a fight. And workers are going out on strike in record numbers. My publication, Payday Report, it's a crowdfunded publication. We've been around about 4 years. I started it after working at Politico and The Guardian. And, we've tracked so far 220 strikes that have happened since March 1st. And so we know there have been at least 220 strikes. And we think that's a quite low number because we think there's a large number of strikes that simply haven't been reported on because there's such cutbacks in media. And we also think there's a lot of strikes that haven't been reported on because often they're illegal. So the fact that we can identify 220 strikes over a 2.5 month period is pretty significant. It used to be on the labor beat that if you got 2 or 3 strikes in a week, that was a busy week. Now, if you get 2 or 3 strikes in a day, that's a slow day.
Well, let me stop you there for just one moment because you say it used to be. Yeah, it used to be maybe for the past 30 years, but not before that. So maybe give us a sense of the trajectory and how this increase represents, in a sense, a kind of a historic trend or a return to a time when unions had more power.
Well, you haven't seen an era of strikes like this since the 40s, really. You had the great strikes after World War II. You haven't seen these sort of mass strikes, and I think they're going to keep on continuing and keep on happening. And I think what's happened here is, in the years prior to this, we saw a big uptick in strikes and a big uptick in terms of public opinion approval for unions. Public opinion approval for unions is at a 45-year high. So this is coming at a time when labor is on the march, but at the same time, we're going to see huge masses of unemployed workers. And many employers know this. Many employers know that there are desperate people out there that will do anything to pay their rent. And many employers are exploiting this. And so it's going to be a very, very tough fight for a very long time for a lot of folks in labor. But the fact is, there is a new boldness that COVID has introduced into it. It used to be that workers were scared of going on strike because they were afraid of losing their jobs. Now they're scared not to go on strike because they're afraid of losing their lives.
We'll talk about these countervailing forces now in the marketplace, a high number of unemployed workers, the weight that places, the likelihood of consolidation of corporations and corporate capital. We'll talk about that. And then this other factor, a willingness now to go out on strike because the stakes are higher. That conversation with Mike Elk, the founder of and lead reporter at paydayreport.com, that continues on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Stay tuned. This is the State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow, continuing our conversation on the labor movement during the coronavirus pandemic, seeing a spike in the number of strikes and labor organizing. I'm talking with Mike Elk, founder and labor reporter at paydayreport.com. Mike, what are some of the big success stories labor has seen in this pandemic?
Well, we've seen a number of nursing homes where I think strikes have happened. Nursing homes have not had a lot of protective equipment, and we've seen huge amounts of death in nursing homes. And we've seen nurses walk off the job in some of these nursing homes and come back and get protective equipment. Those strikes are saving lives. There's no question about it. But if you look at the meatpacking industry, this is a workforce that's majority immigrant, that's overwhelmingly majority people of color. you know, you're seeing workers being fired en masse in the meatpacking industry. You know, we just saw 12 chicken workers fired in West Columbia, South Carolina, just down the road. And, you know, we're seeing there is a big fight back. Workers are fighting and standing up, but employers also know that they have the leverage right now. And they're going to fight back and do dirty stuff. You know, we're seeing employers in Salisbury, Maryland, that just, you know, they're forcing employees to attend captive audience anti-union meetings in the middle of a pandemic. And they're forcing workers to sit in these extremely cramped rooms to hear from anti-union people. This is not good from a social distancing standpoint and so many others. So we're seeing employers really fighting back. But I think particularly you've seen healthcare workers get better protective equipment, draw attention to the fact that their hospitals weren't giving healthcare equipment because no hospital wanted to go out and tell that story publicly that they didn't have sufficient equipment. That is a story that healthcare workers told, and that was a bold story, and that saved scores of lives.
Well, let's talk about Let's talk about these tensions now and how much this now, the attention right now that workers are getting during the pandemic. And as you say, because the stakes are much higher, this is not a matter only of higher pay, talking about a matter of life and death, which is really what fueled the labor movement in the early part of the 20th century, kept it going in the 30s. The stakes are higher now, but as you say, capital has more power now, more consolidation. How do you think this attention in this moment is going to play out for the future?
Well, look, I'm a labor reporter. I don't know how to predict the future, but I could tell you a couple possible scenarios. You know, at first, I was really skeptical that it would be easy to push back on some of these frontline workers. And I remember my friend Campbell Robertson at the New York Times said, look, this is America. You know, we screwed over 9/11 first responders. You know, this is the American tradition. And if you look already, you know, Kroger's is rolling back its hero pay. It's $2 an hour raise for people risking their lives in grocery stores. Other employers are starting to do this as well. So we're seeing employers already do it, and we're seeing people already forget how heroic these people are for doing their jobs. And well, I think that's going to be a big trend.
Well, let's talk about just here in the South and generally the barriers to union organizing from this point forward. What do you think they are? And, you know, as particularly talk about the South and here in North Carolina.
Yeah, you know, I've spent a lot of time in the South. I've lived in the South for several years. And, you know, it's an uphill battle every time you try to organize in a lot of places in the South. There's not a huge union infrastructure in a lot of places, although certainly, you know, there have been a number of gains in North Carolina. You know, workers at Mission Hospital in Asheville, North Carolina, just unionized as a result of the COVID threat. You know, that was a big boost. You know, North Carolina.
Well, just to correct that, Mike, they're still working on that. We're going to talk about that in a minute, but keep going.
Yeah. You know, there are huge barriers to union organizing in the South, particularly with the culture and the climate, and particularly some of the media climate in the South is not particularly friendly towards unions. And often a lot of these publications, which have been cut to the bare bone, don't even have people that know how to really cover labor. So, you know, there's big, huge barriers culturally, in terms of the media infrastructure, in terms of the political infrastructure. But, you know, at the same time, workers in the South organize all the time. Workers in the South win dozens of victories and unionize successfully all the time. So it is possible.
Well, we're going to talk about one of those efforts right now. But first, I want to thank you, Mike Elk, founder of PaydayReport.com. Thanks so much for joining us, Mike.
Thanks.
Yeah, and while the coronavirus epidemic and pandemic has brought attention to worker conditions, certainly at one hospital in Asheville, as we just mentioned, the fight to unionize there in Asheville actually started before COVID-19. Nurses at Mission Hospital in Asheville are awaiting an election date from the National Labor Relations Board. They vote on whether to seek union representation. It would allow them then to negotiate a union contract with HCA Healthcare, which bought Mission Health last year. So to learn more about the union drive, Jonathan Michaels joins us. He's a freelance reporter in Durham. He has reported on the story at Mission Hospital for The Intercept. Welcome, Jonathan.
Thank you so much, Frank.
Good to have you. Tricia Stevenson is here. She's a nurse at the emergency department of Mission Hospital. Hello, Tricia.
Hello, Frank. Jonathan, glad to be here. Thank you.
It's good to have you here and talk about your efforts at Mission. But first, I want to talk to Jonathan for a second. And Jonathan, ask you to lay out the situation we have here. Who are the players at Mission?
Sure. You know, I think it's really important to get a perspective on what the struggle is. If I had to boil it down to just a short statement, it would be that the nurses at Mission Hospital are really attempting to do something that few workers, maybe none, have ever done before. They're trying to form a union in the least unionized state in America against the largest and most powerful hospital corporation in the middle of a pandemic. So who are the major players? Well, the nurses, like you mentioned, they filed a petition in early March to form a union with National Nurses United. NNU is the country's largest labor union for nurses. They have about 150,000 members nationwide. They're represented only at 19 HCA healthcare facilities. They would like to increase that number, but of course, HCA is determined to thwart those attempts. HCA, as I mentioned, is the largest hospital corporation in America. They have more than 180 hospitals in the U.S. and the United Kingdom, and they operate mainly in right-to-work states, so states that have low union densities like Tennessee, Florida, and now North Carolina.
Well, Tricia, as Jonathan said, this is fairly unusual. You're a nurse there. Why are nurses wanting to organize?
We are wanting to organize to have patient advocacy, number one.
Did you say, I might have missed that. Did you say patient advocacy?
I did.
Yeah,
We're hoping to advocate for our patients and our working conditions. We are very excited about the opportunity that the union can give us in the form of a contract to lock in that improved staffing and, you know, patient ratios as they relate to those working conditions. And the union will provide us, we feel like, with a framework for change. And this is, you know, driven by the nurses at Mission Hospital.
Well, Jonathan, let me ask you, because HCA just recently bought that system, and I wonder what kind of changes HCA made after it acquired Mission Health.
So from what I'm hearing from the nurses, especially longtime nurses at Mission Health, they were told that there would be no changes to the bedside for at least a year after Mission took over. And Mission, when HCA took over, which was in February of 2019. But really within 6 months, they started to see dire changes in their units. Unit secretaries were eliminated. Certified nursing assistant positions were cut. And that led to an exodus of experienced nurses. Physicians also felt the brunt of the changes. There were aggressive contract renegotiations. Physicians' practices that had long associations with the hospital just severed their ties. So there were a lot of changes that were felt at the bedside.
What was HCA saying about these changes, Jonathan?
I'm not sure how much they said publicly about them, but I think their hopes were to streamline the operation. You know, it wasn't a secret that Mission Hospital was losing money in the years leading up to the sale. And they thought that for the continued health of the hospital and for the betterment of the community, that they would have to make the sale to HCA in order to be financially viable.
So, Tricia, I want to get a sense for how you and the other nurses and staff felt those changes when they took place at admission.
Well, I mean, I'd like to speak to that comment, just following up with Jonathan. We were told again and again, you know, quote unquote, we hear you. We are going to be experiencing growing pains. We boast this tremendous supply chain. And we did see these changes unfold. Yeah, we went from a nonprofit to a profit, you know, healthcare corporation that boasted, you know, $3.5 billion in revenue for 2019. And we had, prior to HCA, we had a, you know, very supportive management. They were, you know, accessible to us. We were able to promote change. They could, you know, think creatively themselves and problem solve. We had access that, you know, for ideas that would contribute to improvements. That kind of was shut down. And these changes, you know, came in the form of staffing cuts. That meant our techs that are critical to providing bedside care, our unit secretaries that help expedite flow and patient care, our environmental services team, which now cleans rooms, which we as nurses have taken on all those roles.
So that leaves you less time, I guess, with patient care. Were there any directives on how much time you'd be spending with patients and whether or not that would change?
Absolutely. So that is a large portion of this where these are profit-driven metrics that are unrealistic in our working environment. It is completely with profit in mind and just not for the wellness and the healthcare or the health of our patients. We are more focused on profits than, you know, favorable patient outcomes.
Well, how does that play out in your case? I mean, are you told to, are you given a certain amount of time that you can have for taking a history, for delivering meds? I mean, are you, because, I mean, that's the way a corporation in another business, in another area where healthcare outcomes weren't presumably the goal, you would say, well, I can make this phone for less if you spend less time doing X, Y, and Z. Are you being told to do that, or is that just a function of losing staff?
No, we actually do have metrics in place with a number, like a value. So 30 minutes, for instance, to move patients from the emergency room to inpatient rooms. There is a time attached to collecting lab work from a patient once they land in the emergency room. But given those metrics and the staffing grid and nurse-to-patient ratios, it's completely unattainable. We don't have the techs to support that. We have no ancillary staff to really help us. So, again, we're filling all these roles, unable to realistically meet these metrics.
And I'm guessing, I guess the outcome then would be felt on the patient, right? I mean, ultimately, you're going to get your job done, but they're going to go home either better or not so much.
Absolutely. Our community's certainly taken notice. And so we have, as a result, you know, gained tremendous support from our community and have that inside and growing support inside the hospital. As we recognize our running short for increased productivity.
Was it difficult to get nurses on board? This is not a place, this is not a state that has always been friendly to unions, and I wonder how the idea came up and how it was at first when this idea got floated.
This all started, I believe, from my understanding, last spring when an oncology nurse, you know, was sharing her grievances with her spouse. Her spouse, in turn, did some research on nursing unions and went with the union that had the best track record, is the fastest growing, and was nurse-driven. So, you know, essentially the nurses here are the union. And that nurse was an oncology nurse that has since left Mission, but then two veteran nurses took that ball and ran with it. And so this has been a very grassroots, very courageous, sort of from ground up effort to gain support.
Yeah, I want to play a clip here that kind of indicates how the momentum got rolling from perhaps some skepticism at first. I want to play a clip from a nurse at Mission Hospital. Lori Hedrick is an RN and a certified wound ostomy nurse who works in a number of departments at the hospital.
I was somewhat skeptical, but mostly scared. I think the thought of trying to start a union seemed completely overwhelming and, you know, fear of being terminated if it was discovered that we were trying to do this. So I was never anti-union, but when I finally did first talk to our union organizer, I had a whole lot of questions about, you know, specific things like, you know, what if they want to fire me? And what's the deal about having strikes? That sounds like a really intimidating kind of thing to have to do. So all of those questions were really answered to my satisfaction, and I pretty quickly became very interested and wanted to be pretty involved as a leader.
So that's Mission Hospital RN Lori Hedrick sharing her introduction to the Union Drive at her hospital in Asheville. I'm here with Jonathan Michaels, a freelance reporter, and Tricia Stevenson, an emergency department RN at Mission. Jonathan, what is Mission saying about this drive for a unionization?
So obviously, HCA has remained consistently opposed to the union. By law, they have to allow the nurses to hold the election. You know, in public statements they've made, they have said that they do want the election to go forward, but they want nurses to have, you know, opposing views to kind of counter the information that they're getting from NNU. You know, like other companies, they would rather not lose control over the workforce. So they don't want, you know, any impediments between the employees and management. So they have kind of branded unions as being divisive and undermining, you know, that flow of information.
Tricia, what did you experience in the hospital as a response to your efforts to organize?
Well, it's not a friendly environment, number one, to unionize. The barrier being education and the misconception being that it is illegal to unionize. So that is a tremendous hurdle to overcome. And I was told by a friend who, you know, works at a unionized hospital in California, he was all in support, said, absolutely, Mission needs a nurses union. But he said, you will never get it. And it has been a courageous just journey with the nurses building support, just knowing these grievances were system-wide, and we had the responsibility to the community of Asheville that really drove us, and recognizing our patient care crisis was just pretty much all we needed to sort of convince nurses that this was the right thing to do.
What about the pushback that you may have heard that nurses shouldn't be striking? These are people's health. These are people's lives on the line. You can't stand on a picket line while people are dying.
Well, so there is a process with the union, and we are not compromising. This campaign is for patient care. So the strike is a process where you build up to that. And once you are unionized, Frank, you go through a process where you fill out forms called an assignment despite objection. And you build these up, you submit them to a manager to try to solve them then and there so that you can improve patient care. You're not compromising your license. You're not compromising your patient population. And then if that is not amended, then that goes to the higher-ups. We have our nurses negotiate with HCA and try to come to a settlement. And if that doesn't happen and we are further compromised, then we may strike. And the length of the strike is a day.
Right.
And so that is, you know, sort of impetus for HCA to not go that route.
Tricia Stevenson, an emergency department RN at Mission Hospital in Asheville. Jonathan Michaels, a freelance reporter based in Durham. You can find links to his work at our website, stateofthings.org. Thank you both for being on the program.
Thank you so much, Frank. Thank you.